Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mona, in the nearly 6 years we've been doing this show, the landscape of EB5 has really been changing, primarily with those seeking EB5 investments. When we started, it used to be primarily Chinese investors, but now it seems like the number one country is India. Are you seeing that as well?
Yes, Mark, you're absolutely right. For the United States right now, they used to say it was the second most common destination for Indian migrants. But right now, I feel that it's the first. This is the most popular destination. And interestingly, when we began back in 2015, at that time, China dominated the overall market. It had something like an 83.5% market share. And then Vietnam, which India dwarfs in population size, that also had a huge share of the market. With India at a very small amount, I think it was something like, 2.9% or, some very, very insignificant amount. But then it didn't take long for it to shift to the most being the most popular destination. And also, Mark, from the Indian subcontinent, we were talking about Bangladesh, Pakistan, India. For Indians, EB5 really does make a lot of sense. They don't have the option of E2. And Indian immigrants, on average, have a higher amount of skilled, so they have a high usage of employment-based green cards and the skilled occupation-based H-1B visas, which is one of the reasons why we are here today. And why we have Rebecca and Ginny back on the show to comment on this area.
Hi, Mona.
Hi, Mona.
Welcome back, Rebecca and Ginny. I know you both have a lot to say on this topic. I do believe that for Indian immigrants, the EB5 program makes a lot of sense. Unlike the Pakistanis and Bangladeshis, they don't have the advantage of an E2. And Indian immigrants, on average, do have a higher household income, and the statistics that they do reflect a higher usage of the employment-based green cards and H-1B visas.
That's true, Mona. This is Jinhee Wild, and thank you for having me back again. EB-5 for Indian nationals have been a little bit slow to start, but they have gained popularity because they found out that having H-1B status for 10, 12 years really didn't make sense for them, and that many doctors, for example, with higher income, was able to take advantage of the EB-5 program and get the green card faster.
Yeah. Rebecca, you and I have discussed many a time how a lot of the Indians, especially the ones in the tech industry, have waited for all of their lobbyists, for some kind of legislative change, as their lobbyists keep promising.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen, money thrown for legislative action on this. And, we haven't seen anything at this time. They keep waiting and waiting.
There's been a lot of attempts, yeah.
But they these large tech companies are throwing money. And the government, it's immigration. So unfortunately, everything is twice as slow. But at the same time, too, if for immigration, there's a lot of focus on DACA and Dreamers at this point. So I think it is the time for H-1B applicants or those who filed I-140s who are in the waiting line to take advantage at it being back down to $500,000 again as well.
Right. Well, I think the statistics do show that even though the largest group of investors are Indian, the actual larger group of the Indians are local H-1B. So I'm going to ask you both a number of questions, which a lot of H-1B candidates are throwing out at us. One of the first questions we keep getting asked, am I too late to take advantage of the $500,000 investment amount?
No.
Not at all.
So at least we both agree on that, Jinhee. Yeah, we haven't heard anything. Congress hasn't come back with increasing the amount. We've heard different dates. Jinhee, what would be your opinion? What do you think we would be seeing an increase?
Well, I until either the courts, appellate court, takes this issue up, or Congress acts to permanently increase, we're at $500,000. Yeah. So now is the time to jump in.
Yeah. And I would say now it does take time for, you know, our H-1B. I have a lot of H-1B clients out there who say, oh, I can get this done in a week. It doesn't take a week. It takes longer. So it's the right time to start. Don't think, you know, we do say there is time, but Congress could come back and say at any time it could increase.
Right. Well, I do want to ask you both. I mean, Jinhee, is there a fear that we will see a backlog for Indian-born candidates in the future?
Well, it depends on how many investors will jump in, but the country cap is still there. So I'm not going to say no, but at this time, priority date is current. And the amount is back to 500,000 from 900,000. So many of these tech industry, medical industry, H-1B holders who are making annual income of $300,000 or more can easily do this.
Yeah, right. I agree, Jinhee. And Mona, you and I actually had this discussion earlier in that we're seeing a lot of our clients now who have been working on an H-1B for years. And at this point, we've seen a lot of them, their restricted stock units are now being able, they have enough in that to be able to actually afford the EB-5 program. So that's where a lot of our H-1B clients are, the source of funds are coming from.
Yeah, that's very true. But what about the significant jump from October 2020? Have EB-2 and EB-3 applicants seen a move towards the green card?
Very few.
I mean, no. Each year, when the new fiscal year for the federal government starts in October, about a month or two later, you always see a jump in priority dates in all categories, and especially employment-based category. That's relatively short-lived. As visa numbers get taken with adjustment of status cases being handled or immigrant visa cases being handled overseas, as the year goes by, it will equivalate or settle down, balance it out. So don't be surprised that this will go back to more slower pace than the jump that we saw from October.
Yeah, I think we already saw that from the, what was significant about the jump in October 2020, it was because it moved from 2010 or 2011 for dates for filing, by the way, which would be chart B. We saw that jump significantly to 2015, where applicants can file for at least put the application in to obtain the employment authorization and advance parole. And that quickly went back to normal processing times. I mean, as of today, those dates are back to 2012 and 2013. So if they were lucky enough to have filed at that point, great. I had clients who received the EAD and advanced parole, but they're going to end up waiting years and years before they get the green card.
And that is for somebody who's applied in 2013, 2014, Rebecca?
Yes. So the priority date will be based on when you filed your I-140 petition. So if you were a client who got lucky, let's say you filed in 2014 and you were able to file your I-45 in October 2020 because it moved to 2015, now it's retrogressed back to 2012. So you still have to wait in line for your green card.
Well, I want to correct Rebecca a little bit. Priority date is based on when you filed I-140 only for national interest waiver or EB people that interest waiver or extraordinary ability kind of people, when you can actually self-petition. If your I-140 is based on a labor certification, perm labor certification for EB-3, for example, is based on when the labor certification application was filed.
Oh, yes. That's why we have
I knew there was a reason we wanted Jinhee on this program, Rebecca. So for Jinhee, for someone who applied or hasn't applied yet, say he's only applied in the last year, say 2019 or 2020, what are the times that we're looking at?
We're looking at minimum 10 years or more.
For 10 years, are you sure? I heard it was more like 100 years. That was what Charlie had said at one of the events.
That might be.
Yeah.
I did say 10 years or more.
Yeah, I remember in 2019, that's when we got a flood of H-1B interested in EB-5 because he came out and said that EB-2 and EB-3 would be 50 years backlogged.
Yeah, 50 to 100 years. I think.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, you know, Charlie is the visa number guy, so... Mr. Oppenheim here, but I don't want to say, you know, 50 to 100, but it's going to be minimum 10 plus years. So it still puts EB-5 as the fastest option if you jump in now. And even if it goes back, his prediction, Charlie Oppenheim's prediction was maybe 5 to 8 years. That's heck of a lot better than 10 plus.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I will say that it's, as far as Charlie's concerned and a lot of other mathematics statistics that I have seen, it is in excess of 50 years if you file now. So, yeah, obviously, the EB-2 and EB-3 is not the correct route. But, you know, when we're talking about Indian immigrants are a little different from other immigrants. They tend to be more entrepreneurial. And there are a number of H-1B clients who want to invest in their own business. Rebecca, Jinhee, what are the implications?
Well, H-1B status holder is tied to that employment who gave you that H-1B. Mm-hmm. So if you are moonlighting, as it were, you are taking a chance. If you are basically merely a passive investor and you're just investing, that's a different matter. It's no different than, you know, holding stocks. However, if you have an operational things, let's say you buy a hotel and you are running the hotel on the side, then you're risking your H-1B status.
Yeah. And I know a lot of clients too, even if you're risking your H-1B status in that, and then of course USCIS will look at that to ensure that you are in status for your EB-5 application. But a lot of clients come to us too and say, well, if I've earned funds from this company that I own, can I use that for my source of funds? And that's where it gets complicated as well, because technically your source of funds have to be earned lawfully. And have you been in lawful status at that point to earn these funds to use for EB-5?
Right.
Again, you know, let's distinguish investment versus employment. Mm-hmm. So H-1B holders has to be working for the H-1B sponsor employer. And when you change jobs before you can start working for the other employer, you have to file the change of employer petition on an H-1B. So if you are changing or if you have an additional employment with a W-2 coming, mm-hmm. that's a different story. If you are just an investor and getting a K-1, that may be okay because you're just investing your money. You're not being employed by another entity.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, what about the question we get asked all the time for people who are on H-1B and they want to put $500,000 into their employer's business?
Well, that, you know, it depends. If it's their employer's business themselves and they're an H-1B holder, I mean, are you saying if their employer is giving them funds for the EB-5?
No. They want to put their own $500,000 into their employer's business rather than another business.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't see an issue with that if their source of funds has been lawfully earned, right? It's their funds. And if the employer can create an EB-5 project where you're creating new jobs, it's not just a reinvestment and into the business, it could work.
So it's treated the same and has the same restrictions as any other EB-5 investment? no special stipulations or special restrictions?
It has to meet the same EB-5 requirements.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark, meaning that we have to show where the 500,000 is being used, how it's creating 10 new jobs. You can't use it for the existing jobs, et cetera. So
right.
So I have to go along with that, Mona, because we have a lot of clients who ask us if their employers can give them the EB-5 funding. And that you have to be careful with too, because then your employer has to show, well, how are they lawfully giving you the funds?
Yeah.
So that's a fun topic as well.
Yeah. Well, what if I have ownership in a company and I lose, but I'm on an H-1B and I lose my H-1B status?
If you don't have a status, you can't stay here.
But you can still file an EB-5 petition, yes?
Yeah, but whether or not you can file EB-5 application 526 is different than whether or not you can stay.
Right.
Mona, let me ask you, what if in that situation, you said they already have ownership in a company, would they have to invest an additional amount, the EB-5 amount, in order for it to qualify as EB-5, or are you looking for their subsequent or their previous investment?
No, that's interesting, because we have seen this happen where a person has come and said, look, I've already put 100,000 into my employer's business and I'm also on an H-1B. If we can source that 100,000, you can count that 100,000, for example. But it all depends on how they've invested, because there are so many rules and regulations on how that is done.
Okay. And that's the key, is how they did it. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's case by case. There's so many scenarios out there, and we've discussed so many just in between in this 5 minutes. I think it is case by case. So you have to, H-1B holders, they do need to speak to an attorney and be wary of, you know, if you have ownership in a company and how you can make sure it works for EB-5.
Right. Jinhee, Rebecca, adjudication times. I know we're only looking at the direct program right now, but what are your guesses on processing times? Will an EB2, EB3 move faster than an adjudication times for an I-526?
Well, I mean, I-140 has a nice thing about premium processing. So apples to apple, immigrant petition of employment base, I-140, you can get your adjudication done in 15 days with premium processing fee of $2,500. But 526 does not have that. And the processing time for 526 keeps getting longer and longer. We were hoping, since the termination of the regional center program in June 30th, the processing time of already pending petitions and 8-9s will be faster, but I didn't really see that either. So I'm not really sure what investor program division people are doing or have been doing for the last 4 months, but processing times for I-526 is ridiculous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But I think when it comes to it, first, for the Indian investor who's stuck in the backlog, even though your I-140 may be approved and maybe you went through premium processing, it's the fact that you still have to wait for your priority date, right, to become current.
Yes.
So your priority date is 2017, 2018. I think you'll definitely get your EB-5 visa before then.
That's correct. I mean, we said before, EB-5 is still the fastest route for the Indian nationals.
So now that our Indian immigrant has filed his EB-5 petition, he comes to us and they say they have lots and lots of questions after filing their EB-5 petition. Well, number one question for you both. Must I maintain my H-1B once I filed my EB-5?
Yes.
Yes, if you want to stay in the U.S. and go through adjustment of status.
Why?
You have to, you can hold one status at a time. If you have a H-1B status, that allows you to stay in the United States. Filing a immigrant petition does not allow you to stay. That's just, may I transition into a green card category employment-based immigration? That does not give you a status. Status will be given when you file the adjustment of status. So until you can actually file that adjustment of status, or even after, my recommendation to anyone, this applies to not just H-1B holders, but also to F-1s and everything else. When you have a status in hand, you do not give that up until you actually have another status to replace it, i.e. the green card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good advice, Jinhee. Can I file multiple immigrant petitions, ladies?
Yes. Yes. I have one client who has a family-related petition pending, a sibling visa, has filed EB-2 for herself and her husband. During that time when it jumped in back in October 2020, she downgraded to EB-3. So those are two petitions pending. And she has her EB-5 petition pending. So all of that is fine and can run at the same time.
Hmm. But can she file multiple I-485 applications?
No. Well, yes.
one of them. Which is it?
Yeah. No. I mean, you can.
Yes.
You can only get one green card.
Yes.
So whichever gets adjudicated first, the other one you should withdraw or it will be denied, saying, we see that you got another green card.
Yeah, I get that all the time because sometimes, especially with the regional center program lapsed at this point, a lot of our clients had filed the I-45 application. And a lot of our clients, I have a few clients that ended up getting, maybe they got their green card through the EB-1 process, or luckily enough, their EB-2 or EB-3 category, their priority dates became current. So now they want to file an I-45. So we do caution, we say, yes, you can go ahead and file, but as soon as you receive the green card from one application, just be sure to withdraw. Or I have had clients, the same thing like you said, Jinhee, they'll get the denial based on that. But I always tell my clients to make sure, because they'll also say, well, I want to withdraw my EB-5. I say, do not withdraw until I see the green card in your hand.
That's correct.
Well, can they travel with an I-485 pending?
Yes, but we caution that as well. If you have an H-1B status and you have a EAD based on 485, it's better to travel with an H-1B than an EAD, because once you've used that EAD card for employment as well as travel, your H-1B disappears and you will be only under a adjustment of status, pending status. So if something goes wrong and 485 gets denied, everything goes.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So Mona, we got a lot of questions from our Indian clients in regards to that question, because with the H-1B, they have to go back. When they go back to India, they have to get the stamp, because a lot of times they have to get it renewed every year. So that becomes a huge question. Well, my H-1B, if I leave, I have to go get restamped. And then they have fallen into that issue of how long is it going to take? Am I safe to travel? So they have to kind of be wary of that as well. And I always say, go ahead. I agree with Jinhee. You do travel on the H-1B. Make sure you go to the consulate and get your stamping done. If unfortunately you cannot, then at least you have the advanced parole and the EAD to come back in on. You just have to use that to continue working, as the H-1B will no longer be there.
What about if you have other non-immigrant petitions like an L-1 or an O-1?
Again, O-1 is not, but L-1 and H-1B is a dual intent visas. You know, you being able to travel and stay here depends on how well you do in terms of L-1, the subsidiary.
Jinhee, for the person listening and for myself, what does a dual intent visa mean?
There's a non-immigrant visa from E to F to, you know, L, H-1B, O visas, etc., right? And those are, you're not getting a green card from those visas. And most of those categories, you have to show that you do not have an immigrant intent in order to get those visas, with exception of Ls, L1 and H1B, which I guess because of the business and the work authorization that they do get under that allows you to have an immigrant intent as well as non-immigrant visa at the same time. But if you're a student, you're not supposed to be thinking about green card, I want to immigrate here permanently. So you have to be careful as to what you say to the consulate officers when you are applying for a non-immigrant visa. If you're not sure, please consult your immigration attorneys.
Yeah, thanks, Ginny. Rebecca, one question which we get asked all the time for people who have EB2s and EB3s, if they move into an EB5 project and they manage to get current on their EB2 or EB3 within 2 or 3 years, for example, or before the EB5 actually is adjudicated, can the project return their funds? Can they withdraw?
So that depends on the partnership agreement and offering document, doesn't it?
Yeah. So what I tell my clients is, yes, if you have the green card, you can withdraw your EB5 petition. No doubt about that. But the return of funds from the project, you're right, Jinhee, it all depends on the contractual obligations, right? These projects are, you have gone into a contract, they're depending on your funds. And you also don't want to jeopardize the project in a way where it's going to hurt all the other investors in the project. So as much as I know project developers want to work with clients and their investors and making sure they're able to return the funds, it all depends on the contractual obligations and how well the project is doing to be able to return the funds within the time period.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rebecca. Not only are they there to serve you and protect you, but they also have to serve and protect all their other investors. And can they do that at the cost of everybody else by returning your money if it's not part of the agreement?
Yeah, and Mark and Rebecca, don't forget that the EB-5 is an at-risk program. That means your money is at risk. And it also means that you're not buying a green card here. You do have to go through your contractual obligation.
Well, sounds like if you are an investor from India, you have possibilities. And what possibilities are those? Well, again, it really depends. It depends on what your past and perhaps future investment were, as well as the presentation of that past and future investments. And it sounds like the gist of this episode has been, it's on a case-by-case basis. There are plenty of possibilities. Definitely seek expert advice. Mona, Rebecca, pleasure as always. Jinhee Wild, again, thank you for coming back on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.